Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
I know people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
It's a new week, which means it's time for a new Fenway Rundown podcast, Mass Live Red Sox Show. I'm Chris Cotillo with Sean McAdam, as always. We did three episodes from Nashville. We are no longer there. The winter meetings are over. The offseason is still rolling. We will, on later episodes this week, get to talk about Tyler O'Neill, the Red Sox new acquisition, which happened Friday night. We'll have a mailbag episode with our subscribers via our insider text. But today, we have a very special guest and the newest Hall of Famer, Joe Castiglione, the Ford Frick winner. Sean, I know it's somebody that has been a close friend of yours for a long time. When I was the one who informed you that he made the Hall of Fame the other day, and you were very, very excited to receive that news. And I thought, you know, Joe was an excellent guest, as you'd expect for someone who is on cloud nine right now and has the experience he has.
Yeah, great news for Joe. He'd been on the finalist ballot for three times, and the fourth time proved the charm. We're thrilled for him, and we'll get to him in a moment. But as Chris mentioned, we do have our insider text program, which we're going to be cultivating questions from for an episode later this week. And we'd like you to be able to join us to have access to me, to Chris Cotillo, to Chris Smith, all off season long throughout spring training and into next year. It's an opportunity to stay as current as possible on Red Sox news, both in and out of season. You can text your questions. You can give us trade scenarios. You can comment on what's going on, and we'll get right back to you on your laptop, on your handheld device, on your tablet, whatever you're using to access the internet. It's a great way to communicate with us. And all you have to do is text JOIN to 617-751-6257. Then all you have to do after that is click the link and subscribe today. It comes with a 14-day free trial period, and then it's $4.99 a month. We think you'll find it worthwhile and most of all fun. We are thrilled to be joined today on our latest episode of the Fenway Rundown by Joe Castiglione, longtime Red Sox broadcaster who last week was named the latest Ford Frick Award winner for excellence in baseball broadcasting, an honor that I think we all agree was overdue, but nonetheless welcome. Joe, congratulations and thanks for joining us today.
John and Chris, great to be with you. Thank you so much. It certainly has been exciting. It's been a week or so, and it's still trying to set in here.
I'm sure, Joe. tell us a little bit. I know that you talked on the call immediately after you got the news about getting the news, but tell us about that morning waiting for the phone call to come and maybe the subsequent days and some people that you've heard from that have reached out to congratulate you.
Well, you know, this was the fourth time that I was a finalist, and the Hall of Fame tells you that we will call between 10:30 and 11:30 with a noon release if you were the winner. If you're not the winner, you won't hear anything. So I had radio silence for the first three times, and I got to be 11:21. on Wednesday, December 6th. And I said, well, it's not going to happen. And then the phone rang. And of course, being a technical klutz, I went to put it on speaker so my wife, Jan, and son, Duke, who was recording, could hear it. Instead, I hit the disconnect button. And I cut off the call. It was a long 40 seconds before Josh Rawitz, the president, and John Chastakowski, the media relations director, formerly with the Red Sox and the Lowell Spinners, got on the phone and gave me the good news. So that was very, very exciting. And then it started right away with the calls and the emails and the texts from great friends. And there have been so many, I think over 300 of them. And yeah, when you're overwhelmed like that, you wonder, can you answer them all? But I was convinced to do so because I called Jim Leland. Joe Morgan and I called Jim Leland. Joe knew him from his minor league managing days, to congratulate Jim on being elected to the Hall of Fame. And Jim said he had already returned 450 texts. He said that Sparky Anderson told him many years ago, if someone calls you, even if it's a weekly newspaper from Podunk, you're obligated to call them back. So you do that. And so I took his advice. And it's wonderful, the people you hear from, the baseball people, old friends, people you never expected to hear from. And it's been very, very gratifying.
Good for you, Joe. Tell us about maybe somebody that you heard from that surprised you, someone you hadn't heard from for a long time, or someone that you hadn't anticipated reaching out to you.
Well, I was very surprised to get a phone call from Wade Box. That came, I believe, the day after. That was very nice. So Wade was very gracious. He said, the hardest thing you'll have to do in your life is that speech. Because, of course, he went through it. But I did hear from Hall of Famers like Jim Palmer and Dennis Eckersley, Jim Cott. And, you know, I heard from a guy named Romeo, who used to own Romeo's restaurant at Lake Wales, when we used to go there all the time when the Red Sox trained in Winter Haven. Now, that was out of the blue. I mean, we haven't been there in over 30 years. So that was fun. And a lot of coaches. That was great. Because, you know, broadcasters, writers, we're closer probably to coaches many times than to anyone else in the organization. We're sort of in same income bracket, I guess. But it was fun to hear from the likes of Juan Nieves and Tom Goodwin, as well as, of course, more recent guys like Victor Rodriguez and several others. So it's been a lot of fun to hear from people that were happy for me. I think that's what's so gratifying.
That's great. But I know that you have been a frequent visitor to Cooperstown over the years, in part, Joe, because the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown is not far from your alma mater, Colgate University. In all the visit, first of all, any idea how many times you've been to Cooperstown, and did you ever allow yourself to dream of seeing the plaque that will be there next July?
Oh, I did dream about it a long time, ever since that section went up, which is beautiful. It's overlooking the big window outside of the statues of Johnny Padres pitching and Roy Campanella catching. That's really cool. I did dream about that. I actually, you know, didn't go to the Hall of Fame until first time was the summer of 1969 when I was working in Syracuse and going to grad school there. Because you know, we didn't have cars at Colgate, and it was 50 miles still back roads. But I think I've been there probably 25 times over the years with various people. We're going to take a ride up this weekend and check out some of the logistics. But it's a wonderful place. I usually do a program for anyone who's happened to be visiting in the Hall of Fame at that time with one of their officials, Bruce Markinson, and others, Jeff Otteson, of course, when he was the president, our former intern. And I just love being there. It's so much fun. I've done some research there. The library is fantastic. I always liked it better than our library at Colgate, better books. But it's been certainly a place that's very familiar. The village is cool. And, you know, we've stayed all over different places. And now you got the Field of Dreams there for the kids. It's just a remarkable place, really in the middle of nowhere.
Joe, I'm wondering, because of your broadcast schedule, have you ever attended an induction weekend before? Usually you're, of course, busy that weekend. Have you ever played hooky and gone to an induction ceremony?
Twice. And that was very recently. I went when Pedro was inducted. Actually got there Sunday morning because we had a game on Saturday, drove as far as Albany and finished the drive the next morning. And then I went for David Ortiz. So those are the only two times I've ever been at an induction. I've never been to see the broadcaster or the writer receive their awards. I used to be at the Doubleday Field outside. Now it's at the Glimmer Glass Opera House. That's as close as I'll ever get to an opera, by the way.
And Sean and I went when David Ortiz got in, Tim Kirchen was inducted as part of that ceremony at the Opera House. I know Wade Boggs mentioned it, and you're already thinking about it, but when it comes to that speech, is it an overwhelming process to even start thinking about that, you know, all these months out? Do you have a good idea of what you're going to say, or how's that kind of coming together?
Right, Chris, I think it's going to be a big thank you, and I did have the experience of the Red Sox honoring me with the 40 years. It'll probably be similar to that, maybe a little bit longer. I have a 10-minute limit, I'm told. So I think it'll be thanking family and mentors and people I work with along the way, players, coaches, broadcasters, front office people, writers. So I think maybe, you know, a couple of anecdotes about the connection with Cooperstown. And a lot depends on, I think, who the guests are, too, who comes, and I might point some out. But I haven't written anything down yet, but the thoughts are flying in the head.
When you obviously you've spoken to a large audience now for, you know, four decades plus, it's a little different than standing up in front of that crowd in that setting. Do you think there'll be a different level of nerves or a different type of kind of energy than you might be used to?
Oh, no question about it, Chris. I'm much more at ease talking into a microphone where you don't see the audience you're talking to than standing in front of a group, and especially a group like this. I mean, I'm not used to being the focus. I'm the one asking the questions and trying to get the answers rather than being the center of attention. So that will be, I think, a lot different. And I did talk to Pat Hughes, last year's winner, and he said that the lights are such that you don't get a great look at everybody in the audience. Maybe that's easier.
Right. I wanted to ask, you know, you've been doing this obviously a long time and have so many memories calling World Series and the players you've gotten to meet, the people, the different places you've been. When you look at this honor, is it kind of a culmination of all of that, you know, to stand out among your peers? Is it icing on the cake for a great career? Just how do you kind of square, you know, what this all means?
Well, I think it really is the icing on the cake. It caps what I think has been a very much a fun career. You know, I first started out, I wanted to do Major League Baseball. Then I got the Cleveland Indians job on TV in 1979, only 40 games in those days, pre-cable, pre-MCBS prime time for a sixth-place team very often. And, you know, then I came to the Red Sox. I wanted to make it through and do a year, and it ended up being so far 41 years. I wanted to do a World Series, then wanted to be part of a winning World Series, and I never thought that they'd name the booth for me, and I never thought that this would happen. It was something, you know, you think about, but you sort of don't let yourself get carried away with it because the odds are so much against it, and there's so many qualified people. I mean, anyone of the 10 on the ballot, and many, many others certainly are qualified, and it just so happened that I had the blessing, so it's going to be very, very exciting. And, you know, still pinching myself that this has happened.
Joe, 41 years in the radio booth doing play-by-play of the Red Sox. Radio is seen as somewhat of a timeless medium. In some ways, it hasn't changed all that much. But the broadcasting and telecasting of baseball has certainly changed on TV. the innovations, the replays, the number of camera angles, the immediacy, the delivery on the platform, the streaming services. Is radio the same job as it was in 1983? And if not, how has it changed for you?
Well, I think it's a little bit different, Sean. First of all, we're on Sirius XM, so it's a worldwide audience and not just a regional audience. And the proliferation of information. The internet has changed everything. I think so much is out there. It's much easier to prepare. When I first started with Cleveland in 1979, I'd go to the Cleveland Public Library and get out the newspaper files from out-of-town cities like Chicago or Detroit or Boston. And they were 3 days late to try to catch up on what was somewhat current with the opposing teams. Now, of course, you just log in and there you go. So I think that's really changed it quite a bit. The new analytics, relatively speaking, I think have changed it somewhat. We try not to get too involved with numbers. Any number I always thought should tell a story and not just the number for number's sake. And you don't want to overwhelm people with figures because it makes it more like going to work for them. This is supposed to be recreation. So if you can tell a story, it's worth a thousand numbers. So I think that has been a factor. And I think we've always encouraged being conversational with one's partner, because baseball is a game where you sit there and you talk to the person sitting next to you, whether it's your best friend or your father or uncle or somebody you never met before. And I think that's a part of the nature of it. It's not just my innings and your innings. And I think all of those little things have changed, but radio is still a basic. I think because it's portable, because you can go to the beach with you and especially in the car with you. And the pace of the game has always been for radio because you don't have to pay strict attention. And we know about the slow pace. Fortunately, it's faster now. We love the pitch clock. But I think that, you know, when you think about how there's so much non-action, you don't have to concentrate completely if you're listening to radio.
I'm sure in the last week, Joe, you've given a lot of thought to the many partners that you've had on the air, dating back to Ken Coleman, who was largely responsible for you getting the job in the first place, and then on to Bob Starr, Jerry Trupiano, Glenn Geffner, Tim Neverett, now Will Fleming. The list goes on and on. What are you thinking as you look back on the number of on-air partners that you've had in your 41 years behind the Red Sox mic?
Well, I certainly will thank them in my talk. They all stand out individually. Ken Coleman was largely responsible for bringing me to Boston. Normally, we don't have any say in who's hired to work with us. But in that case, 1983, John Miller had left to go to Baltimore, and the Red Sox games had left a Boston station to go to WPLM in Plymouth, Campbell Sports Network. Ken was coming along with it, and he had say because Jack Campbell and Jane Day, who ran the network, had never hired anyone. They listened to Ken, and I happened to work with Ken's son, Casey, his late son, Casey, in Cleveland, who came over from radio to our TV station and work with him on some of the basics of editing and putting TV packages together and that sort of thing. Casey recommended me to his dad, and we took it from there. And Ken was a wonderful mentor. He taught me one thing that always stuck with me, that this is a game of failure. You're going to see a lot of players having bad days. I mean, if you look, a hitter goes 3 for 10, he's failed 7 times, but he's still very successful. And he taught me the patience in that category. And I think that was a great learning lesson. And I watched Ken and listened to Ken on big moments. He was very, very good at that. I did a lot of the legwork, and Ken just captured the big moments like the Yaz weekend. And of course, the great moments in 86 when Henderson hit the home run, and we all know what happened in the World Series. But he was a wonderful mentor without certainly being overbearing. Bob Starr taught me how to laugh. I think the burly broadcaster, his burliness, as he referred to himself in the third person, was a wonderful guy. We had a lot of fun. He had a saying, it's not my life and it's not my wife. And he would look over at me when things went bad for the Red Sox. I'll never forget a game where Comiskey Park and the Red Sox had the tying run at third, the go-ahead run at second in the ninth inning, two out. Bobby Thigpen, and I think it might have been his record year for saves, was on the mound. And Jordy Reed, it's a bullet. Thigpen reaches up and grabs it. And Bob says, hey, he catches it, game over, White Sox win. And then he started laughing. And he looked over at me, and I guess I was all hunched over, and he said, sorry, folks, I know the Red Sox lost, but I'm laughing because my partner looks like he's just been harpooned. That's that word he used.
You said on the call, Joe, that that one of the things you're proud of is that people have told you that upon tuning into a game in the fifth inning, they can usually tell within a few seconds if the Red Sox are winning or losing because of the tone in your voice and the way you're approaching the broadcast.
Well, that certainly would be a condemnation if I were doing a network game. we try to be fair, point out when the opposition does things well or when the Red Sox make a mistake. But I'm broadcasting to a regional audience, basically. I know we have, as I said, Sirius XM now, but I think our fans want the Red Sox to do well, and I want the Red Sox to do well because I know these people, the front office, the players, everybody associated, you pull for them, and also people like the announcer better when the team is winning. That's
Joe, I didn't know this before kind of looking into it after last week, but you were a childhood Yankees fan and now have done this for so long. I mean, how kind of weird is that just looking back?
The dirty secret is out, Joe.
That's mm-hmm. it. Well, I talked to Susan Waldman a lot, who was a Red Sox fan and went to Fenway Park regularly with her grandfather. I grew up in the New Haven area, and I didn't know many Red Sox fans in Connecticut then, at least in southern Connecticut, because it was the late 50s, early 60s. The Red Sox weren't very good, and the Yankees, of course, had the great Mel Allen, who became my hero. Mickey Mantle, of course, and I would go to Yankee Stadium two or three times a year and watch and listen to all the games. We, even in the pre-cable days, had like 140 Yankee games on TV on Channel 11. So I was a diehard Yankee fan. I never thought I'd change. It's funny how it works. You know, I went to Youngstown and worked with the Pirates, became a Pirate fan, then in Cleveland became an Indians fan, and Brewers. Somehow it's connected to the paycheck at times. Funny how that works, yeah.
Right. Joe, kind of shifting gears a little bit. You, during his playing career, I believe, enjoyed a pretty close relationship with Craig Breslow. Got to know him pretty well. Just obviously he's in a much different role now as a chief baseball officer. What was your reaction to the news he was hired, and why do you think he's going to be successful in this gig?
I was very excited, Chris. As I say, I've known Craig and knew of him when he pitched at Yale because my brothers pitched at Yale a generation before he did. And when he came to the Red Sox, the first time I actually met him, but we knew all about him. And I think besides his obvious intelligence, he played the game. He has experience. He knows what it's like to be in a clubhouse. He knows what it's like to have tough days in the game, as well as success. He was so good in that 13 postseason, especially against Tampa Bay and Detroit. And I think he has a feel for it, and I think he has the ability to separate analytics from the human element. I think that will be a big factor because of his experience as a player. Obviously he's got to learn dealing with agents and that sort of thing. Although, he was represented by an agent, so I think he has some knowledge there. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be a real plus for the Red Sox. And, if he's given leeway, I think he'll do a very good job.
As you look at this offseason, which is what we talk about on the podcast, obviously, a lot. Not much has happened. Alex Verdugo gets traded. Tyler O'Neill comes in last week. Obviously, pitching is the name of the game right now, and they're in on some of the biggest names. What would you like to see them do?
Well, I'd like to see them get two starting pitchers for one thing. I think that's going to be difficult, but there's not a great deal on the market. And I think they will come up with at least one, maybe two arms. You'd like to see the defense better, but I think it will be with Trevor Story healthy. And second base remains a question. But I think from what I've read, I don't really know much about Tyler O'Neill other than his numbers. We haven't seen him play much. But I think that should help the outfield defense. And but the pitching is the main thing. And we'll see what happens. But they have to be better defensively. They have to catch the ball. Right now, you can't make any predictions. We don't know who's on the roster. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we can make this prediction, Joe. We know that when opening day rolls around, you will be again behind the mic and part of your starting your 42nd year. I know that you've scaled back a little in the last couple of years, dropped some travel and enjoyed life with your wife, Jan, and doing some other things away from the ballpark. What are the plans for you in terms of the future? How much longer do you want to continue doing this? And I'm going to assume that it's still something that, you know, that you don't want to let go of, that you still enjoy doing.
Well, I do love it. It'll be family decisions. I really haven't made up my mind completely yet. And if I do continue, to be fewer games. I did 90 this past year, probably, 80 to 90 this season. And we'll just take it from there. But I've had so much fun. I still love it. And I still am blessed with good health. But Kirk Gotti told me that years ago. He said, you have to have good health to do this job. And I was very blessed.
Well, a terrific year coming up for you, Joe, culminating with induction weekend toward the end of July in Cooperstown. We're thrilled for you. We're glad that you are not, as you had feared, joining the Buffalo Bills in infamy with four appearances without a win. We're glad that you finally got your just due and can't wait for the induction ceremony. Thanks for joining us today, Joe, and congratulations again.
Well, thank you much, gentlemen. I've read you many years and have always admired you and cherish your friendship. So I really appreciate that you're reaching out to me. And thank you so much.
Our thanks again to our guest, Joe Castiglione, the Ford Frick Award winner, who will be honored next July in Cooperstown. We're thrilled for Joe and happy that he joined us for this episode. We will have another episode later this week in which subscribers to our Insider Text program will provide the questions. If you would like to be among them, all you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257, then simply click the link and subscribe today. It's free for 14 days and $4.99 thereafter, an opportunity to stay most current on all Red Sox news in and out of season.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.